Welcome to the premiere episode of Cynical China. I am Xu Zeyu, senior journalist with Xinhua News Agency and the host for this podcast. China's ruling Communist Party of China has just concluded a pivotal leadership meeting known as the Third Plenary Session. Attended by over 300 party's ranking officials, the four-day meeting released an important resolution that is set to project the trajectory of the country's economic reform in the next 5 years. In 1978, the first such reform-themed Third Plenum inaugurated a dazzling four-decade-long economic rise. So, what about this time? In which direction will the meeting steer the world's second biggest economy? How will China tackle a series of institutional issues to break the economic headwinds? And what are the implications for China's relationship with the rest of the world? I am privileged to welcome Liu Chao, who is now a professor of finance and the dean of Peking University's Guanghua School of Management. Professor Liu, thank you for joining our discussion today.
My pleasure.
Before and after this year's third plenary session, some overseas China watchers played down the expectations and believe there will hardly be any groundbreaking reform policy coming out of it. Judging from the meeting's resolution, what is your view on the extent and depth of the upcoming reform? And what kind of reform benefits can we expect from the next 5 years and beyond?
Yeah, actually, I think this is a very important meeting. The third plenary session basically set about 300 reform measures. I think it's a very comprehensive set of reform measures which cover pretty much every aspect of China's economic and social development in the next years, next 5 to 10 years. And also, I think the resolution has made it very clear that I think the timeline, all of the reform measures should be complete in 5 years' time. And therefore, that is going to lay down a very solid foundation, institutional support for China's Chinese modernization. I think basically the message I take from this this meeting. Yeah.
Okay, let's get to some of the details. Compared to the 2013 meeting's document, the resolution of this year has devoted a lot more to the reforms in the sector of science and technology. It is seen as a move to further develop what the Chinese leadership hailed as new quality productive forces, which was said to be characterized by a significant increase in total factor productivity, or TFP. So, according to your view, how has China's overall TFP changed over the past few years? And has the new reform roadmap offered any policy measures to boost TFP?
Yeah, I think definitely TFP growth rate is a fundamental driver of the economic growth. I think in the past 3 or 4 decades, we are seeing the dynamic change of TFP growth in China. I think in the first 3 decades, from 1980 all the way to 2009, China has maintained a very high TFP growth rate, which is above 4% per year. That translates into, I think, about 10% of GDP growth rate. But since 2010, because China has more or less complete the industrialization process, therefore the TFP growth rate has declined to about 1.5. Actually, some estimates say it's 1.8 or 1.2%. But in any case, it's below 2%. So that actually casts some doubt on China's future growth momentum. If you have only 1.2% of TFP growth rate, I think the GDP growth rate will be somewhere around 3 or 4%, which is below the 5% required GDP growth rate for China to basically realize China's modernization. So I think that this is a challenge China is facing. And to a great extent, I believe that the Chinese government proposed the concept of high-quality development. And also, President Xi introduced the term new quality productive forces. I think the underlying logic is that we need new productive forces. We need technological innovations. We need a comprehensive set of reform measures to unleash the goals of TFP. So I think given that, I somehow believe that in the next 5 years, with all of those reform measures in place, with the development of science and technological innovations, China could recover its TFP growth rate. And I believe it's going to move back to above 2% level, given that a 5% of annual growth can be achieved. I think that is the bottom line. That is what we need to basically realize the Chinese modernization by 2035.
Building on my last question, and of course your answer, by heavily investing in scientific and technological innovation, China has continued to climb up the global value chain. And this third plenum seemed to have signaled China's resolve to stick to this path. Some people came to worry that this move would incur backlashes from the developed world, like the United States and Europe. Do you see this as a valid argument? And will China be subject to more hostile protectionist moves because of its push in sci-tech innovation?
Yeah, actually, we're seeing some changes in the global market. People are talking about de-globalization. And right now, I think the narrative has changed to re-globalization. So in any case, we're seeing that different economies, different countries are trying to restructure its their value chains, supply and industrial chains. In China's case, we rely on global supply chain heavily because China is one of the largest exporters and importers in the world. But if you look at the position of China along this global value chain, we locate more or less downstream, middle stream or downstream. I think in economics we have a term, upstreamness. Upstreamness basically measures the extent a country, a economy, the position in the global value chain. I think our upstreamness is quite low, which means that we have to rely on foreign countries for very important inputs, key components, important patterns, those things. So I think given the change in the global environment, I think if you rely on other countries for those important ingredients for your products and the services, it's it incurs a lot of risk. So given that, I think it's a must-do for China to move upstream along the global value chain, which means that you're going to get into the area in which you rely on foreign countries before. So the only way to do that is R&D and the more fundamental research, more input in these areas. So I think that is China's reaction, response to a changing external environment. You can argue that it's not cost-effective, right? Because basically you deviate from the specialization, which is one of the fundamental laws of economics. But I think given what is changing in the global environment, this is something China has to plan. Has to conduct strategically in the next years.
At this third plenary session, the party vowed to finish building a high-standard socialist market economy by 2035. Ever since 1992, the party long used the expression socialist market economy in official documents. What does it mean to add a prefix high-standard in the phrase this time? What implication does it have for the country's private sector in the future?
Yeah, you're right. The resolution actually emphasizes the goal, the target of reform. is to establish high standard socialist market economy. High standard actually is one big step further compared to simple term socialist market economy. I understand. My understanding is that there are quite a few aspects. The resolution, the third plenary session, set up some reform measures, trying to improve the efficiency, trying to improve the performance in those different aspects. I want to mainly raise one or two examples. For example, when it comes to the private enterprises, I think this time the resolution has made it very clear the reform is to try to establish a level playing field. To deepen the reform in the factor markets, such as land use rights, finance, and important raw materials, to ensure that the market is going to play a very decisive role in terms of allocating those effect production factors. I think that is one very important new message, which means that the market itself right now is playing a very important role in the allocation of final goods. But this time, I think it's turn to see some real progress in the reform of factor market. So that is one example. Another example is about the, as I said earlier, is about private firms. It has made it very, very clear any firms, regardless of your form of ownership, should have equal access to the market, to different factors. I think that is a very strong message, which means that on the top of two unshakables, SOEs and private economies, private sectors are equally important, and they should be treated equally in all aspects. So I think that basically indicates the market economy we try to build in the next years will be high standard market economy. It has implications for private firms, and I think hopefully this is going to recover their confidence level and strengthen their confidence I think in the future.
Now that we talk about the market economy and its environment, there is an unavoidable fact that China has long grappled with a sluggish domestic demand. Do you see any plausible reform initiatives from this third plenum that might meaningfully boost the consumption?
Yeah, I think when we talk about high standard market, socialist market economy, it also implies that the growth model is going to change from the old, investment-driven model to consumption-driven model. Because I think the motivation for reforms is to recognize Chinese modernization, and so make people let people benefit from reform, from economic development is very important. And I think on that front, I think changing growth model to consumption-driven model is one big change going forward. The third plenary session has many areas talk about how to improve consumption, how to increase the demand, especially domestic demand, that people have can benefit. People can benefit from the reform. I think there's a couple of points. For example, you talk about how to increase disposable income of a household. Currently, household income only account for about 43% of China's GDP. I think going forward, a very large number of reform measures have been proposed trying to boost this number. I think that is I think one very specific way to boost domestic demand. And also you talk about develop, promote service sector, use digital transformation and other technologies to create consumption scenarios, make consumption easier and more accessible for Chinese people. I think those reforms basically can help create an environment which can benefit the consumers, which can help increase consumptions. So we have quite a lot of reform measures which target this aspect. Yeah.
On another note, there is a chapter in this year's resolution that specifically elaborates on the fiscal and tax reforms. It stipulates that the central government will henceforth shoulder more expenditure responsibility, and the local government will be entitled to more sources of revenues. Do you see it as a viable solution to the accumulated debt problems for the local authorities? And how do you think this reform will be implemented?
I think in the past 30 years, we're seeing that local governments play a very significant role in local economic development. And in terms of tax revenue and expenditures, I think we're seeing some imbalance. Local government largely relies on central government transfer, fiscal transfer, and also land sales as a source of their expenditures. But in recent years, I think we're seeing the drop of real asset market, both in investment and also the property price. Therefore, the revenue from land sales is declining. And that creates some problem for the local governments because you used to have much more income source, but right now the income source from land sales from the local government platform, local government borrowing platforms actually are shrinking, are getting smaller and smaller. So I think that this is one of the root cause of local government debt problem. So to solve this problem, I think the third plenary session, in the resolution, has made it very clear. It's important, it's a must to balance what the local government do and what resources, the size of local government tax revenue. You have to make this two balanced. You cannot overspend. I think there's two ways of achieving this rebalance. Number one, trying to increase local government's tax revenue. So give them some additional tax resource, tax source. Therefore, they can have much more revenue than before. So I think people are talking about consumption tax, which will be shared by central government and local governments. I think that is one of the directions we're seeing in the resolution. And the other point is that trying to probably to change the scope of local governments' operations. I think going forward, we expect the governance of local government will change. Probably the KPI will also change. So GDP will not be the only indicators when it comes to performance assessment. there'll be a more diverse indicators, including whether you can make local people economy develop in a sustainable manner, and whether it's a harmonic society, and whether you have a very friendly, dynamic business environment, which is conducive to private enterprises. So I think those things will be incorporated into the performance assessment going forward. And that will help achieve the balance between what government have and what a local government does in the future. Yeah.
China, the Communist Party of China's third plenary session has huge implication, not just for China, but also for the world. So what do you think are the signals for the foreign investor from this meeting? Granted, there are many measures that enable foreign capitals to participate in China's economic activities on equal footing. There are still concerns that some of the policies would not be thoroughly put in place. Are you expected to see a rise in global investors' confidence in Chinese market after this meeting?
I think, as it is stated in the resolution, those reform measures are trying to set up, I think, institutional support for China's modernization in the future. So I think with those reform measures in place, I think that is going to help increase China's GDP growth rate and facilitate China's transition from fast growth model to high quality growth model. And China right now, I think, account for about 30% of global growth. So if China can grow in a sustainable manner, I think that is good news for the whole world. So given that, I think China is going to be still very important, not just because it has a very large market. It's a very important market for global firms. It is also because that China's healthy development, sustainable development can contribute to the world, can drag the global growth forward. So I think it's very important. For foreign investors, I believe that it's really hard for them to find a market as dynamic, as large-sized as China in the near future. I think in the past years, there's discussion about who is going to be next to China. And I think pretty much I tend to agree with the judgment that the next China is still China. Especially with those very comprehensive reform measures put in place, I believe that the momentum, the growth momentum, and will continue, and China will identify new growth engines in different areas. And new industries, like strategic industries and the future industries, will emerge. And that means huge amount of investment opportunities, not just for foreign investors, but also for local investors. So the problem is that how we can make these reform measures become reality. And I think it takes hard work, it takes determination, it takes concerted efforts from different sectors. I think I'm confident that those reform measures definitely will lay down a very solid foundation for China's future development, especially for the next 5 to 10 years.
Thank you, Professor Liu Qiao, for sharing your insights on this issue. Professor Liu is the Dean of Peking University's Guanghua School of Management. I am Xu Zeyu with Xinhua News Agency. That is all for this episode of Cynical China Podcast.